Today is July 1st, 2026. This is your FinTech briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 minutes, we'll cover the Warsh Fed's permanent retirement of forward guidance and what it means for bank balance sheets, Danielle DiMartino Booth's case that concealed labor deterioration and shadow banking opacity are converging into a systemic stress event, and China's coordinated shutdown of paper gold trading, a monetary infrastructure move with direct implications for correspondent banking and benchmark integrity. Let's start with the rate environment, because everything else flows downstream from this. Bob Sheehan of Lighthouse Macro has been doing some of the most rigorous structural work on the Warsh Fed's communication shift, and his framework via the Forward Guidance podcast is worth internalizing in full. The core observation: Fed Chair Warsh has not simply changed tone. He has retired forward guidance as a policy tool entirely. FOMC statement word count dropped approximately 50% from roughly 340 words to approximately 170. District bank presidents have been largely silenced. And in a move with no modern precedent, Warsh abstained from September and December SEP.plot submissions entirely, while 9 of 18 officials shifted rate projections in recent SEP cycles, signaling elevated internal disagreement that the chair is no longer managing through public signaling. The operational consequence for institutions is structural, not cyclical. For over a decade, forward guidance functioned as an interpretive filter. It suppressed rate volatility and anchored duration risk pricing. Without it, raw economic data releases now function as first-order market-moving events. NFP prints, CPI, PCE, JOLTS. These are interpreted directly, without the smoothing effect of Fed communication. Treasury auction metrics, bid-to-cover ratios, primary dealer takedown percentages, tail size, now become leading indicators of long-end supply absorption capacity in real time. Lighthouse Macro's framework identifies two sequentially distinct rate environments that institutions need to disaggregate in their ALM planning. Near term, you get a bear flattener. The removal of a dovish anchor on front-end pricing creates upward pressure at the short end. Over 1 to 3 quarters, that resolves into a bear steepener, driven by structural supply dynamics. Projected Treasury net issuance of $2 to $2.5 trillion annually through 2026. The retreat of foreign official sector buyers. China has reduced USD holdings from approximately $1.1 trillion at peak to approximately $775 billion, and continued Fed balance sheet normalization through QT. U.S. interest expense on federal debt now exceeds $1 trillion annually, surpassing defense spending as a budget line item. The broader fintech pattern here is that the SVB failure mechanism, unrealized losses accumulating in long-duration AFS and HTM portfolios during a rate hiking cycle, now operates in a regime with materially less backstop certainty. Banks that have not disaggregated their ALM frameworks for a dual-curve environment are carrying a structural blind spot at exactly the wrong moment. Looking at the macro risk landscape, Danielle DiMartino Booth of QI Research is making an unusually pointed case that surface-level stability, approximately 2.5% Q2 GDP growth near record equity indices, is systematically concealing three independently destabilizing forces converging simultaneously. The first is the labor market divergence. The quarterly census of employment and wages, the QCEW, captures mandatory headcount reporting from over 95% of U.S. employers. It recorded net full-time job losses in Q1, Q2, and Q3 of 2025, with rolling 12-month losses approximating 600,000 positions. Headline NFP survey data has told a materially different story. Booth notes that Warsh explicitly cited the QCEW reconciliation as the only reliable employment data point at his inaugural press conference, meaning the Fed itself has internalized this divergence. That's not a footnote. That's the policy anchor. The second force is commercial real estate distress, migrating from office, where distressed sales reached 10-year highs in 2024, into multifamily. The 2-10s yield spread stood at 26 basis points as of the interview date and is compressing, creating simultaneous refinancing risk for CRE borrowers and net interest margin pressure for holding banks. Inflation projections compound this. Booth projects negative month-over-month headline CPI prints in the second half of 2025, driven by shelter deflation expanding beyond Sunbelt markets, the Atlanta Fed wage tracker retracing fully to 2019 levels. and WTI oil normalizing near $70 per barrel. The third force is the most structurally significant for financial stability purposes. The non-bank financial intermediation system reached $258 trillion in assets at end 2024, 51% of global financial assets. Private credit portfolios are marked to model, not to market, against a backdrop where corporate bankruptcies are running 40% above year-ago levels in observable public markets. The implication is straightforward. If visible insolvencies are up 40%, private credit portfolios, which cannot be independently marked, are likely carrying higher impairment rates that haven't surfaced yet. Building on that, DiMartino Booth assigns private markets risk a 7 to 8 out of 10 concern level, and separately notes that private equity sponsors executed a record $251 billion in equity issuance in the first half of 2025, which she characterizes as informed distribution. Sophisticated sellers liquidating to less informed retail and retirement fund buyers. And then there's the consumer credit cliff that lands today. As of July 1, 2025, approximately 42 million student loan borrowers resumed repayment obligations following forbearance continuously in effect since March 2020. The delinquency migration lag across mortgage servicers, auto lenders, and credit card issuers runs 90 to 180 days. Consumer bankruptcies are already running 10% above year-ago levels on an accelerating trajectory. BNPL volume is expanding despite consumer stress. Functioning as off-balance sheet leverage that credit bureau models and bank underwriting systems incompletely capture. Confluence of these channels is what makes this a systemic risk conversation, not a credit cycle conversation. The third structural development is the one that will be most underestimated in traditional risk frameworks. China's coordinated suspension of paper gold trading at four of its largest retail banking institutions, ICBC, Postal Savings Bank, Ping An Bank, and China Guangfa Bank, unified on a July 24, 2026 effective date, is not a retail market story. It is a monetary infrastructure event. The specific instruments being eliminated are margin-traded leveraged deferred paper gold contracts, not physical gold ownership. The synchronization of the shutdown date across competing institutions, competitors who would normally exploit any timing gap for arbitrage, confirms top-level policy coordination. This was not a regulatory coincidence. The scale of the surrounding infrastructure commitment makes the strategic intent clear. Hong Kong vault capacity is expanding from approximately 200 tons to over 2,000 tons, a tenfold increase. Central bank gold purchases reached a record 244 net tons in Q1 2026, the strongest first quarter on record per World Gold Council data. China's People's Bank of China added gold for 18 consecutive months through mid-2024. You don't build a tenfold vault expansion to support a paper settlement system. Looking at the regulatory landscape for correspondent banking specifically, the LBMA currently clears approximately $50 billion or more in gold daily on an unallocated basis. The Shanghai Gold Exchange's physical delivery protocols and the Hong Kong expansion create a parallel reference price architecture. Financial contracts referencing the LBMA gold fix now face benchmark fragmentation risk, structurally analogous, though mechanically distinct, from the LIBOR to SOFR transition. Institutions need to be running that scenario now, not after July 24th. More broadly, China's CIPay's cross-border payment system processed approximately $17 trillion equivalent in 2023, growing approximately 27% year-over-year, while remaining approximately 8% of SWIFT volumes. Institutions with over 40% of cross-border trade finance volume on dollar-only rails should be modeling attrition scenarios as yuan corridors develop. FinTech Thesis Update for July 1, 2026. Three things shifted in the industry outlook today. First, the Warsh regime change is no longer a communication story. It's a balance sheet architecture story. Institutions that built duration positioning, ALM frameworks, and hedging strategies around a Fed that managed volatility through signaling are now operating with a mismatched assumption set. The dual curve sequencing, bear flattener near term, bear steepener over 1 to 3 quarters, requires disaggregated responses, not a single rate view. Second, the shadow banking opacity problem is approaching a disclosure and provisioning reckoning. With visible corporate insolvencies running 40% above prior year levels and private credit marked to model, the gap between reported and economic impairment is widening. The 42 million student loan borrowers who resumed payments today are the detonator on a consumer credit deterioration sequence with a predictable lag structure. Credit provisioning models calibrated to the last cycle are likely to undershoot. Third, China's gold infrastructure pivot is the kind of slow-moving structural change that gets ignored until it reprices a benchmark. The LIBOR transition took years to internalize. Institutions that start scenario planning for LBMA benchmark fragmentation now will have a meaningful runway advantage. The emerging opportunity sits in the intersection of constrained supply and institutional readiness. Energy finance. With a structural upstream CapEx shortfall of approximately $350 billion annually against a required $750 billion, is generating free cash flow yields exceeding 15%. Banks with commodity trading infrastructure and ESG classification expertise are positioned to capture premium structuring fees in that environment. The window is open, but it requires sector-specific capability, not generalist credit appetite. Watching the rails. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.